Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Final hour of the show begins. Our buddy, Albert Breer of MMQB and SI, is on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Kind enough to spend a couple of minutes with us to talk NFL. I want to start with Kyler Murray, Albert, because you had a lot of intel on him the last few days. So coach me up on this. I know that he's 5'9", and I get that a lot of the scouts you're talking to and some of the people I talk to say this is a third-round, second-round type player. But here's the bottom line. I could name 100 guys that are second- or third-round players that have gone in the first round over the last handful of years. He's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's got a much better game than Lamar Jackson, in my opinion, who went in the first round. I can't see any way that he doesn't go in the first round because these guys get overdrafted by 40 picks all the time. Why wouldn't he?
Well, I'll tell you this, Grant. I mean, I think the interesting thing about it is he's different than some of the shorter guys we've seen in the past. And what I mean by that is he's not just short, he's small. Baker Mayfield was short, he wasn't small. You look at Russell Wilson, he was short, he wasn't small. This guy is actually short and small. And so why does that matter? Well, because the way they played him in Oklahoma, they used, as they should have, his legs as a weapon. And to get him vision, they rolled him out a lot. Okay, so because we're some more creative things in the NFL now, you can do some of that stuff, right? That's been proven. That college stuff works. Here's the part that's tricky. What happens when he starts getting hit, right? Because if you're going to play that way, you're necessarily going to get your quarterback hit. Is he going to be able to hold up long term? And so, I mean, there's just some moving parts with him that are a little different than anybody that we've ever seen. Now, we've broken down barriers. There's no question about that. The height thing isn't as big a deal as it used to be. The translation from, you know, college offense to pro offense isn't as big as it used to be. But this is from a size standpoint, is really pushing the limits. And look, there's no question that if you've got that size deficiency, you have to be exceptional. Baker Mayfield was exceptional. Kyler Murray, because he's even shorter, because he's much smaller, he's got to be even more exceptional. And so it's going to be a fascinating thing to talk about. If he sticks with his decision, to go into the NFL draft, it's really, really going to be a fascinating discussion over the next few months. And I'm with you on the part of it was, quarterbacks getting overdrafted because, typically when a guy starts to get to the second or the third round, he's going to wind up in the first round of that position.
Albert, locally, we're pretty focused on the fact that the Redskins are doing this secret flirting for new coordinators, and a couple of their coordinators are leaving to go lateral moves around the league, and it doesn't look like it's a great place to be right now. Give us the national perspective on that, and kind of what's the buzz of the league about sort of the Redskins' front office, state of the union. It seems to be here, us looking at it, like a big sinking ship.
Sure, it's sort of weird. I mean, this sort of stuff happens, and I know that the public doesn't see it, but I certainly think there's been cases before where, head coaches have gone out and quietly kicked the tires on this coach or that coach, and, a lot of times in those cases, if you're bringing in one coach, it means you're getting rid of another coach. But generally those things are done really quietly. And a lot of times those things are, in the works before the season ends. I think what's different about this one is that it's carried now 3 weeks into their off season and has become public. And so that can create some issues for you. And not the least of which, guys, I mean, this is a big part of it. Like, now your players are hearing about it, right? So, the first sign of trouble next year, say they hit some bumps in week four or week five, are your players going to be tuning this coach out because they knew that there was steps taken potentially to replace him. So I think you can make an argument that maybe they've already gotten past the point of no return. I don't have any indication they're going to pull the plug on Minuski right now or tomorrow or next week, but I do know that they've made bringing him back exponentially more difficult.
Albert Breer on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. The latest on Antonio Brown is that Bruce Arians came out and said he sees a little bit too much diva in Brown. There's no way he's a Steeler come September, right?
I'd be surprised. I just think it's hard. And look, I don't know that we made a big enough deal about what he did.
I agree.
I honestly think there are a lot of people that are sort of glossing over what actually happened here. I mean, how many people? Let's say you're an accountant, okay? Let's just put that out there. Let's say you're an accountant, right? And you don't show up for the last 4 days leading up to April 15th, and then you show up on April 15th. What would happen? Like, how many accountants are there in the world that are good enough to survive that? It's like he literally went AWOL for 3 or 4 days leading up to a game that was, I mean, they were playing for this season. It wasn't as a playoff game for Pittsburgh. Now, they didn't get in, but there was still a chance they get in. It was an enormous game, and he just vanished. The reason I'm explaining it that way is, like, how do you bring that guy back? How is that guy going to fit in with his teammates? Because his teammates trust him. When there are signs of trouble next year, like how are they going to be around him? It's such a big part of, like, the way these teams are constructed, and I know this is a challenge for coaches, is getting people to trust each other and getting people to rely on each other and getting people to count on each other. And, you know, beyond just, you know, guys liking each other, it's guys respecting each other. And I just think that, you know, with a player like this, with Antonio Brown, it's, like, really, really hard for me to see how, like, other guys in that locker room can never look at him the same way. And so, you know, I certainly think the Steelers are going to do what they can to try and ascertain his value over the next 6 or 7 weeks. And I think chances are, because he's such a great player and because his contract's affordable, they'll be able to get a pretty decent return for him.
Our buddy Albert Breer is with us here on Grant and Danny, senior NFL reporter, lead content strategist at the MMQB. Give him a follow at Albert Breer on Twitter. All right, let's get to these matchups here. I am all in on this Rams-Saints matchup. I know there are bigger storylines with, you know, one more ride potentially for Brady and company versus the new kid on the block and Mahomes, but I remember that great game that the Rams and Saints played. These teams aren't playing as well, though, or at least they weren't down the stretch. They showed some vulnerability there. Give me kind of your assessment of this game overall, Albert.
Yeah, you know, I think that the Saints, what they showed us last week was the potential for what they could be the whole year. It's a level they haven't completely reached on a consistent basis. And I think when we came into the year, this looked like the most complete team of the Drew Brees, Sean Payton era. And then they got off to the rough start on defense. The offense slumped down the stretch. We just haven't seen them firing on all cylinders. And I think, like, last week against a really good Eagles team, you actually saw, like, how complete they could be. They can run the ball. They can play defense. They don't need Drew Brees to throw for 350 yards to win games anymore. And so, like, I look at the Saints going into this game, and we know both those teams can win games on offense. I don't know that the Rams can win a game on defense. And I think we saw last week that the Saints could. After that pick of Marshawn, on the wheel route down the sideline, Marshawn Lattimore really sort of stopping the momentum there, picking off Nick Foles. The Eagles weren't able to do much at all. And so losing Sheldon Rankin is a big hit. But I think what we're looking at is a Saints team that's far more complete than Saints games we've seen in the past. And yeah, that's the fact that the game's going to be played in the dome. Hey, the Rams are going to have to earn it if they're going to have a chance to win on Sunday.
Check out Albert Breer's work, Sports Illustrated, with the MMQB, longtime friend of the show, who's good to us here on Grant and Danny. Much appreciated. Keep grinding. I know it's a busy time for you, and enjoy the games this Sunday.
Enjoy the games, bud.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you. There's Albert here on The Fan. Always good intel, always good information. I love getting the national perspective on the Redskins. sometimes, you know, we think one thing here in town, people think otherwise outside of D.C. That's obviously not the case based on what he just said.
Yeah.
With this coaching situation,
perception
unfortunately.
Is reality, yeah.
If you could ask Bruce Allen one question, if he actually did a press conference where he talked to the media and or talked to you, what's the one question you would want to ask next on The Fan? The Wizards are off tonight, as are the Caps. You know, the Wizards are in London right now. They made the trip across the pond. I saw video of Bradley Beal getting absolutely mobbed by different reporters. Looked like fans. I couldn't tell the difference. You know, people just with camera phones kind of shoved into his face. He was signing some autographs and doing some different things. But they love the NBA. Anytime these guys leave the United States, like Brad Beal could walk around Chinatown right now and a couple people might be like, hey, man, you're doing a pretty good job of that wall. He's in London, and he is the bee's knee.
Because he's not a towering figure. I mean, he's like 6'3", 6'4". Lots of people are.
He's big enough, though. If Brad Beal walked into wherever you were, Foot Locker or a Wendy's, you would go, that dude's something.
Yeah, he's somebody.
Is he 6'5"? Is he not that big?
I don't think he doesn't come across as that huge.
He's listed 6'5".
If you saw Trevor Ariza, for example, like his arms down to his shins, at 6'8", you would go, basketball player. Bradley Beal could pass for something else. He could just pass for a really in-shape guy. Yes.
Oh, dude, I think if he walked in, I wouldn't necessarily basketball player, but I would say professional athlete. 6'5", 250, pretty sculpted. He'd be dressed to the nines, probably. I'd be like, that dude is somebody.
Yeah, he's something. But I guess what I mean is, I'm not saying this the right way. Like, when Kevin Durant approaches the 7-footer with the condor
wingspan.
There's
only one outcome.
But yeah, like when you see a basketball player, you know, the guy that's like so impossibly tall in person, you can't even believe that a human being grows to that level.
The brow.
Yeah. Like you just go, oh my God, that's somebody incredibly special.
If the brow walked into a room you're in,
yeah,
there's no other possibility. Now, he's also one of the more recognizable faces because of his unibrow in sports. But just the body type, you're right. You would go, oh, what NBA team does he play for?
Whereas if I told you that's Bradley Beal, he's a safety for the Redskins. Oh, okay, I believe that. Or he's just a bouncer at a nightclub that's in great shape.
But
oh,
Beal's
okay.
Becoming a star.
Dude, he's playing all-star basketball.
He's going to be an all-star again. He has been before. I mean, he's almost playing at a superstar level at this point because he's become the dude in Washington. Without John Wall, he's getting a chance to be the chef in the kitchen. He's the top banana, and right now he's playing like it. But he's getting national attention for it, too. All the talk shows, all the guys like Jalen Rose who are, you know, shouting out James Harden, who's dropping 57 and doing his crazy stuff. Soon thereafter, they're talking about how good Brad Beal is. And it's not surprising to me when the Wizards went to London that he's
getting the star
treatment. Guy that everyone wants to talk to and see. And by the way, it's not like they're playing the Warriors or the Lakers and you got to worry about a team with more popular items than you. I mean, they're playing the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Why are we exporting Wizards Knicks to London? I know
same reason it's always like Jacksonville, Cleveland,
but,
you know?
But in the NFL, at least, there's like teams with deals based on stadiums, and they're not going to fill up Jacksonville, so we'll go once a year, and you know that going in. If this is a showcase, they don't do this every year.
No.
This isn't like the NFL where it's clockwork three times a year we're going to London. This is a special thing. Why didn't they send somebody that matters? I can't believe they didn't send a team like even the Rockets, let's say, or mm-hmm. You know, pick your team, the Warriors with Russell Westbrook.
Or even like an up-and-coming MVP candidate, like Milwaukee with Giannis.
Perfect.
You know?
Send Milwaukee, that's great. The Wizards and the Knicks?
Yeah, it seems weird.
That's a weird game to have in London.
Yeah, I'm with
Am
you.
I missing something?
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, the Knicks have enough, despite being terrible. I mean, they've been terrible for a long time. They're as poorly managed as the Redskins, if not more so, with James Dolan. He's a tyrant, and he stinks. But there's not... There's still some cachet because it's the Knicks and it's New York's team. But, yeah, I'm with you. It's not a marquee matchup, to say the least.
Bruce Allen does not speak to the media. When he does, he handpicks outlets where he knows he's not going to be challenged. He'll go on a radio show on the NFL channel on Sirius XM occasionally with Pat Kerwin, who he knows pretty well. He does some weird radio show in San Diego from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it is. It's that guy on the Mighty whatever. You know what I'm talking
Mighty
about?
Mighty 1090?
It's like 1090 or something. He goes on a show in Nashville from time to time. But what he doesn't do is sit at a podium and take questions from Redskins reporters. He refuses to do that. It's just not something that he's going to do. The last time he did it, it was a disaster, and he got clubbed from every angle. And on behalf of the fans, reporters grilled him for some of the mistakes that he'd made. And it was such an unpleasant experience that he hasn't done anything like that since. He's talked a couple times, introducing someone next to him, and whether that's Doug Williams to get a new role or sitting next to someone who can deflect some of the attention. But he has not done a press conference setting. Anyone who wants to can come. I'm here for 35 minutes. Ask whatever you want. Sit down situation. It's not happening. Here's the question. If he did that again, it would be the first time in over 1,000 days. It would be the first time since right around New Year's Day, 2014 becoming 2015. What's the one question you would want to ask him? You'd probably have 1,000. What's the first question you'd want to ask Bruce Allen? 800-636-1067. Walter is in Alexandria. What's up, Walt?
Yes, good afternoon, sir. You know, I simply ask Bruce Allen, why are you bringing a coach back who has admitted on occasion he did not have the team prepared? I say a coach's main responsibility is to get the team ready to play. And if he has admitted that he didn't do that, then I think that you need to make a replacement. At least have the team ready to play. And that would be my question.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that. I think that's just something coaches say, by the way.
And that's my point to Walt. Yeah, I think in your coach, you get your butt beat. You step up in the way you take your medicine.
We
weren't
ready to play.
That's on me. I didn't get the guys ready. I don't really think he really thinks he didn't prepare the team properly.
Now, there are also times where they weren't prepared to play. I mean, you've seen really huge letdown games. You've also seen games where they surprised you. So
remember the game where they were down 40-0 to the Giants in December?
Yeah.
So I want you to close your eyes and remember this. The Giants had scored 40 points and Washington hadn't scored any.
Mm-hmm.
The game was being played at home at FedEx Field.
Mm-hmm.
And the Giants, a last-place team, picking in the top five in the draft again mm-hmm. this year, had 40 more points than the Redskins. They weren't prepared that day. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment, right? Generally, it's hard to tell if a team was prepared or not, and they just got beat for a million different reasons. But
it's his question, not ours.
Yeah, it's his question. You're right.
He's using his question, and I think it's a reasonable question. I think the logic he used was bad. But if your point is, why are you bringing Jay Gruden back? I think that's fair. I'm bringing Jay Gruden back as well if I'm Bruce Allen, and I would explain this way to you thusly. I can't do better than him right now. I'd like to go get a different head coach who might be an upgrade. No one's going to work here who is an upgrade. Oh, by the way, I think Jay Gruden's done a pretty good job. I think he's a solid head coach. I think he has been dealt some bad hands over the last couple of years with injuries. He had four quarterbacks in a span of 5 weeks starting games last year. Good luck winning games that way. There is no play on his play sheet he can call that's going to work when Danny Ruggier's at left guard and Grant Paulson's at right guard. They shouldn't be out there.
We can't execute anything.
We're not executing those plays.
No, we can't do it. We can't do it.
Jay Gruden knows that. So that's my answer as to why he's back, but it's his question, not ours. What are you asking, Bruce?
What specifically have you been responsible for? What specifically have you been responsible for?
You mean good?
Anything. I want to know what decisions he has made. Because when we had him on years ago, remember this, when he came on and called us Grant and Dave, I asked him what his biggest regret was, what would you have done differently. An easy open-ended question to say, you know, we missed on Donovan McNabb, or I wish we hadn't traded for Griffin or whatever, you know, whatever, right?
That's still one of the greatest moments in show history.
And
when he called us Grant and Danny.
And I reset the show 77 times saying Grant and Danny. But he, of course, did his double talk and not answer. I would know that he would never answer any questions because he's
politician
Bruce.
No, this is a truth serum situation.
But I want to know what you're responsible for. I want to go through everything, and then I'll be able to explain. Well, if you weren't responsible for that, you hired the person who was. Your mistake. If you were responsible for it, you failed. I need him to know that I know that everything that he's done has turned to bleep. Everything that he has touched has gotten worse. Everything. With the exception of some fiscal solvency, of being more frugal with the salary cap. That's good. He's done a good job with that.
Kind of good. It's not completely good. It's not all good. Here's why. You don't have enough talent, and you refuse to spend on that talent. The Green Bay Packers would have more than one Super Bowl if they were less, quote-unquote, fiscally solvent. I need you to be responsible, which the Redskins have been. I also need you to be aggressive in trying to upgrade your roster with money.
Mm-hmm.
Stop always being cheap and trying to hand me Stacy McGee and tell me he's a player. He ain't. Stop trying to tell me Terrell McClain's going to get me to the promised land. Not happening. Stop trying to tell me to throw the saddle on the back of Kendall Reyes and ride him to victory.
Right.
He's kicking me off on the next furlong.
Because if you brought
I'm not getting to the finish line with that dude.
If it was your call to bring in McLuhan, then you failed. If it was your call to bring in LaFamina, then you failed. If it wasn't, and you weren't in charge the whole time, you failed there. Less fans care.
Right.
Nobody goes to the stadium. It's worse. It's worse since you got here. Every metric that you could measure a football team by is worse because you're here.
This is a good question from Matt in Arlington. Matt, what are you asking Bruce if you get one question with him?
Gentlemen, thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, buddy.
So the one question I have is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your performance with the organization? Scale of 1 to 10. Now, as a fan, you know, we have this outside perspective. I think I know what he does. I think I know what he's responsible
right.
for, but is he that self-aware of his role in the organization and what he has or has not accomplished?
So here's what I would say. First of all, it's an amazing question. I hope he would say, well, I got to give myself a 1. We're not good enough. We're going in the wrong direction. And I guess my real educated hunch would be he'd say something like that, because he's going to say the right thing. He's a politician. Does he actually think that, though, is the question? And the answer to that is no. But whatever you think is going on, whatever you think of his performance, I think it's funnier and more comical, and it's more hilarious and sad behind the scenes than we even really know. That's my guess.
Mm-hmm.
He is, this is The Office, and he's, who does my guy play? Who's the main character in The Office?
Steve Carell?
Yes, but who does he play?
Michael Scott.
Michael Scott. I think he just walks around shucking and jiving and the fist bumping and double gun pointing, and everyone kind of knows it's a joke. 800-636-1067 is the number, 800-636-1067. You get one question of Bruce Allen. What are you asking him?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We talked yesterday about all of the Clemson college football players who showed up at the White House in their finest suits and then had a big meal with President Donald Trump, which consisted of McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and Domino's. And we were talking about how it was hilarious, right? I mean, some people said it was embarrassing or angry, and everyone used it as a chance one way or the other to decipher their political views. But the fact is, it was kind of a funny thing. I kept looking at the pictures, and I found it humorous. I did see where Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence loved it.
He
a bunch
liked
of the
it.
Players were very happy about it and said they were looking forward to going back. They thought it was very, very funny. So that was worth pointing out. Also, before we get back to Bruce Allen and the Redskins, I didn't know this. You may have, because this is one of those things I think that makes the circles with huge NBA marks. Did you know Steph Curry's jersey is not retired at Davidson?
I did not know that.
So you think of Davidson as a school, not just a basketball program, but as a school, and I don't literally know anyone who went to Davidson other than Steph Curry.
I do. My best friend played football there.
Oh, very good.
We've been friends in seventh grade.
What's his name? Rothschild? Or
John.
John. Oh, that's not as good.
Yeah.
That's too
so
bad.
So that kind of blew up in your face a little
it
bit.
It did a little bit. What's his middle name?
Matthew.
Oh, all right. Well, I got nothing. I wanted to do a funny zing about a name.
No, I know. I know what you wanted. I couldn't give it
nothing.
To you. Just had to give you the honesty.
Would have been nice if you would have just played along and given me a fake name. But anyways, Steph Curry went to Davidson. He's the most popular player to ever play sports at Davidson. He's the most popular person to ever come out of that school, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody somewhere like invented something I don't know about that went to Davidson.
Lefty Driesell coached there for a long time, but this is a different level.
So his jersey's not retired. Well, TMZ's got a story up where the coach at Davidson, when Steph Curry was there, Bob McKillop, who I guess is still there, was in D.C. for something, and they saw him like picking up his bags at the airport. So they ran up to him as if he was one of the Kardashian girls, which I found hilarious in and of itself. Like, who recognizes Bob McKillop?
That's great. A great job by whoever's on the team. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's Bob McKillop. So they run up to him, and he's, you know, in a jacket and a nice shirt, no tie, and he's just dressed down for his flight. So he's very nice and talks to them for several minutes about how much he loves Steph Curry. But they ask why his jersey's not retired. Apparently, this is like a big story that I didn't know about. And McKillop said, I think he's in the process of completing his degree. So they double-clicked on that, and they followed up, and they talked to the school AD, Chris Clooney, as well as, I guess, some other people at the school. And it turns out he can't have his jersey retired until he gets his degree from Davidson.
How about that?
So he's working on it, and as soon as he's done, according to the athletic director, then he gets to have his number 30 retired. But in the meantime, one of the best players in the NBA, the greatest shooter of all time in basketball, the guy who really did put Davidson on the map in a lot of ways, He doesn't get his jersey retired, which is crazy.
So I took an official visit to Davidson. I really like the school. It's an incredible academic school.
It's really good. Carolina, right?
Yeah, it's just outside of Charlotte. And I went through my visit, really liked the campus. Is beautiful. Everybody was really nice. And I was hosted by a guy I'd played against for a few years. I was a couple years ahead of me. And Ricky Paul, actually, a really good player. And I went through the whole thing, and then I met the head coach, Coach Cook. And Coach Cook was, you know, going through the spiel, and they really liked me and all this other kind of stuff. And then he asked me what my GPA was. I told him a 3.0. And he looked like I just, you know what, in his Cheerios.
Well, it's been fun having you here, Daniel.
And he was like, what's your SAT? I said, 1330. And he was like, oh, no. Like, he was mortified by this. And I feel like they should have investigated that.
I was going to say, how do they not know that before you get there?
They didn't do a really good job of that, it sounds like.
Shouldn't that come up at some point before you were there on an official visit?
Before they're on an official visit. And I'm kind of like, why is this a problem? I thought we all had a decent understanding of who I was and what the deal was. And he goes, let me explain it to you this way. If you were on a fence and your clothing was stuck, and one side of the fence was you getting into Davidson and the other side was you being rejected like the tens of thousands of other people that get in here, I could shoot a BB from 100 yards away to try to dislodge you to get you in. And I went, we've just wasted 72 hours. Not that long, 48 hours. We've wasted 2 days here, Coach.
Did you continue with the visit?
No, that was the last thing we were going to do. My dad was picking me up to go home, and that was the end. That was the end. Everyone wasted each other's time. I was not academically qualified. They couldn't do anything about it. That was it.
Did Bob Nightingale have a big report after that about who the favorite was to bring you in?
It somehow didn't make the news, no.
Well, I don't know how it could get that far. That's like a company not doing the bare minimum before you have a meeting where you're trying to get a job, where they find out if you're qualified or not.
Have you been to jail? Yep. Oh, really? Oh, that's awkward.
Don't come in for the meeting later.
Man.
I had a text from a buddy who loves The Office and was very upset that I compared Bruce to Michael Scott. Very, very upset. But yet Chuck on Twitter just said the Michael Scott comp for Bruce Allen might be the best comp ever made. Bravo. So we've got conflicting reports now.
I don't know who to trust now.
I don't know a lot about The Office, but my sense is that Michael Scott is taken as a joke by the people that work there, and he doesn't know it. Is that not correct?
That's a great way to put it.
I feel like that's the case at Redskins Park.
He's completely delusional, and the part is it's actually brilliant. He does just enough where he shows that he has some redemption, some redeeming qualities.
See,
he's got a heart of
Bruce
gold.
Bruce does that as well.
So you empathize with him, and yet you like cover your eyes so often because of how buffoonish his behavior is. It's the perfect mix.
Let's go to Wayne and Waldorf on Grant and Danny. You get to ask Bruce Allen one question. What are you going to ask him?
Party on, Wayne.
Good day, gentlemen. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Appreciate you, bud.
Okay. My question would be really simple. I would say, Bruce, knowing that your father was an iconic figure in Redskins history, what do you think he would think of the job that you've done since you've been here?
Oh, wow.
You're
really hitting where it hurts.
That would sting.
I mean, what could he say?
he'd be proud of all the work we've done off the field. He'd start to sniffle.
Oh, I think
I mean, whoa.
That would be tough. That'd be mean.
That would cut to the core.
I couldn't ask him that question. I don't think I'd have that in me.
Dude, I do.
Here's
not to
my
be tough,
question.
But I could ask that.
You already gave yours. Give yours again real quick.
What have you been responsible for? Because the list should be long, and then I can explain to him each time that thing he's been in charge of or not been in charge of, he's delegated, it's turned out wrong.
Here's my question, and there would be a lot of talking in the question and explaining things so that he understood where I was coming from.
Yep.
Normally, that's not how you ask questions.
That's how I do it.
My question would be very simply, I guess, after all that explaining. Why don't you have a football person running your football operation as a general manager?
What has to happen,
and what do we need to accomplish here together, you and I, right now, so that we can figure out a way that you hire an actual football person to run the football outfit?
Because he would maintain that he is one.
He's not one.
You and I know that. But you know who I don't think knows that is old Bruce Allen.
Everybody in the building knows it. Everyone in the league knows it.
Yep.
So he's got to figure out a way to find out real quick.
Mm.
Also, he would not claim that he runs the football operation. He doesn't do that. He would claim that Doug Williams does. Doug Williams has no business doing that, number one, and number two, doesn't either. That's why he has to turn off his phone when you trade for Alex Smith, or why he's never talked to Kirk Cousins' agent, who you spent 2 years trying to negotiate with when he was, quote-unquote, the GM. Why don't you have a football person running your football outfit? That's my question for Bruce Allen.
Good question by you.
We'll hit the leftovers, dig into the fridge, see what we got that has not yet been eaten next. Grant and Danny getting you ready for Chad Dukes at 2. We're Grant and Danny, and you are listening to The Fan. Good news, Nats fans. Not only that, you got a great couple of segments to podcast. If you missed our Bryce Harper conversation earlier today at thefandc.com after we're off the air, but we are headed down to West Palm Beach for spring training on February 20th. Last year, we went to spring training, and we had a bunch of great stories for you because we stayed in the worst. Is it a hotel or a motel?
It was a motel, and it wasn't the Knights Inn.
Motel. That was just so bad. It was the worst in the area. Well, we're at Hilton West Palm Beach. We are thrilled about this. Hilton West Palm Beach is a flagship lifestyle hotel with a global mentality complementing the destination's caliber of travelers. The Junks got spoiled there last year. Now you and I are going to be at the 400-room lifestyle hotel connected to the Palm Beach Convention Center, directly across the street from City Place Shopping and Dining. So we'll be eating like kings. If you're going to West Palm Beach to see the Nats at spring training, check out Hilton West Palm Beach. But we are very, very excited.
Just
so everyone's on the same page, February 20th, I mentioned, is when we go down there.
It's about a month away.
Here's the deal. We are going to fly out on Wednesday night, the 20th, and we are doing our shows there on Thursday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So we will have two full shows, tons of guests, everyone you want to hear from, coaching staff, players. We'll be on the show over those 2 days. It's going
to
be great.
Who are you most looking forward to talking to?
Max.
Non-Bryce Harper division.
Always
obviously.
Love talking to Max.
Yeah.
That's always great to get an audience with him. I think Doolittle's a blast, so getting Sean Doolittle on the show would be cool. In terms of some of the new faces, let's see. You know who I'm interested to talk to would be Adam Eaton. I think if Harper's not here, I think this is going to be a massive season for Adam Eaton, and how he plays will largely determine the Nats' fate in
what
the division,
they do.
Believe
yeah.
it or not.
A couple guys, interesting stories. Michael A. Taylor, you know, now the sort of forgotten man.
He will
is
call
interesting.
Us sir when we talk to him.
Because he's the nicest person of all time.
He'll be very quiet and very pleasant, but he won't bring any energy in
no,
that conversation.
No, and it's not in his DNA. I don't care about that, but
yeah.
That's an interesting story. To me, the guys I'm most fascinated to talk to, I would say, in addition to like Kurt Suzuki, Yan Gomes, who we had on the show, to me it's Rendon and Trey Turner. Because it's now your team, guys. Again, this is assuming Bryce Harper goes elsewhere.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's assuming that that your everyday right fielder is Adam Eaton and not necessarily Bryce Harper. It's your squad now, right? You guys are the elder statesmen. For Rendon, he's entering his walk year, and he could sign that long-term deal to stay with the Nationals, and he's kind of the face now, even though Zim has been here for so long, the most productive everyday player that they've got over the last several years has been Anthony Rendon. Juan Soto's the bright young star. You know about Robles and the rest, and Brian Dozier will help, et cetera. But this is kind of like the graduation. It's now Rendon and Turner's team, and in their image, so go the Nationals.
The market for Manny Machado is remarkably low.
What's and going on?
What a staggering report we got today. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but it's been updated a few times by Earl on the half hours. Buster only has the number for Machado. And the big offer that he got was from the White Sox, where everyone said, oh, the White Sox made Manny Machado an offer. Well, the Phillies have been waiting to do so. The Nationals offer isn't out there publicly. We're kind of waiting to see what is offered of Machado and of Harper. Well, the first numbers came back, and they're small. Manny Machado got a 7-year, $175 million offer. $25 million a year. That's nothing. But because there are so few teams left now, and he's not in the Bryce Harper mold in terms of what he's going to make, they might get him for 7 and 175 at 26 years old, which is stunningly low. That's basically what his teammate Chris Davis got to stay in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's like
that's nothing.
It's Strasburg's deal, right? Or close to it.
Do you think, I was talking to someone yesterday about this, and we both thought this was the case, but I want to know what you think. Do you remember his quote?
Oh, yeah.
So he got into this back and forth. He's a pain in the ass on the field. We'll just call it what it is, where I love Manny Machado.
He's
an Oriole.
He's a great player.
Excellent talent, but he is a hothead. He's kind of a malcontent, annoying guy on the field. He doesn't care about his opponents, and they better hate me when the game's over and whatever else. He'll break the unwritten rules. I'm a cool guy. Well, he had this quote about basically, I'm not going to be the dude that hustles on every play. Like, that's not my game. I'm not going to be the guy that digs down the line every play. Now, I'm not exaggerating. That was his quote. I think he cost himself a lot of money. There were teams that said, no thanks. The Yankees, their highest ranking officials, non-ownership group, basically came out and said, we're just not sure if we like what this guy represents. For whatever reason, everyone was surprised. They didn't really get in as a major player on him at any point. I think he cost himself a lot of money.
Obviously, I'm not going to change. I'm not the type of player that's going to be Johnny Hustle and run down the line and slide to first base and, you know, whatever can happen. That's just not my personality. That's not my cup of tea. That's not who I am. The fact that he said it is what upset all the people. I got news for you. Everybody, including Bryce Harper, by the way, who's known as the Hustle Harry, he three-quarter jogged down the line on two-hopper room service ground balls a bunch. And I don't fault him for that. I don't care about that as much. I just need him healthy for as long as possible. That wet first base bag, I need less of those to happen. But the fact that he said it broke the code, right? You can't say that, I guess.
You can't say it. You shouldn't say it. And I don't think that most guys feel that way, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe superstars do that have arrived and gotten their contracts. He hasn't. He was trying to get his, and he'll get a nice one. He can live for a while, I think, off $175 million.
It'd be fine.
But
that, I'm stunned that
there
that's
was a time
is.
When 250, 275 was what was expected. Also, the market has not corrected from a year ago.
No.
It's bigger and it's better, but it's still way down and it's probably changed forever. Jake Arrieta on social media, who's an outspoken player this week, said, hey, young guys, watch what's happening to our stars this offseason. You're going to be next.
Yeah. We hypothesized last year that it was a debate. I mean, Boswell brought this up as guys weren't signing for very much. J.D. Martinez signed a deal off a guy that's MVP caliber, that's a fraction, didn't have that many offers. It was between Boston and Arizona. It was $100 million less than we thought somebody of his caliber would get, et cetera. And Boswell hypothesized that this may be the new normal. The other side might be, well, they're all saving up for this summer. They're all saving for this winter with Machado, with Harper, with Kershaw, with all these different names. Well, it ain't the latter. It's the former. Teams who aren't quite ready to compete, aren't quite ready to go all in, don't want to spend like that. And nor should they, by the way. Right now, the rules are set up for you. If you stink, you stay stinky. You acquire a bunch of young players under team control for 5-6 years. You can have a great window to compete by adding some people. This is the new normal until the CBA gets redone.
If you missed any part of today's show, you can grab the podcast at grantanddanny.com/audio or at thefandc.com in the audio archives. You should absolutely do that. Sean and Brendan on the production, always appreciate their efforts. Hopefully, Tommy's feeling better. For Danny and Spencer Breslin, I'm Grant Paulson saying so long.
CDVTW is up next, a great one. The Machado market we just referenced, Chad's got metrics as to why. It's not just the attitude, not the hustle quote. Chad understands line drive percentage and hard contact.
Is this the same packet that he had sent around to the agents?
This is the one.
The one that Boris called him about because Boris didn't like the algorithm he'd used?
This is the one. He invented an algorithm about Manny Machado and the demands he would have, and he predicted 7-175. Unbelievable. 4.5 hours next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.